Now, all our lives can be filled with ups and downs, twists and turns, but our next guest, Eddie Ayres, has had more than a few. Formerly the host of ABC Classics Breakfast Show and a distinguished viola player, he's since rediscovered himself in the most unlikely of places, Afghanistan. A decision to move to Kabul to teach children music resulted in a life-altering moment, and this has all been documented in Eddie's latest book, Danger Music, How Teaching the Cello to Children in Afghanistan Led to a Self-Discovery Almost Too Hard to Bear. And he joins me on the phone right now. Hello, Eddie.
Hey, Mick. Thanks for having me.
Thank you so much for joining us here on 2SER. It's a long title to a book, of course.
Well, Danger Music's the title. The rest of it is just like, you know, the subtitle, I guess.
But I like how it does explain exactly what the book's about. And congratulations on the book, first of all. It's been out for a little while now, but so many great reactions to it and reviews. And it really is a really personal account of your time in Kabul and teaching the children there. Was it always your intention to write about that experience, or sort of something that felt right afterwards?
Yeah, it actually was my intention to write about it. I got an offer of a book contract from Allen & Unwin before I went to Afghanistan. And initially, the book was going to be about the music school and teaching there. But then all the transgender stuff that I'd known about for years but had suppressed, it all came up in that sort of very binary society. Mm. So I came back to the publisher after I'd left Afghanistan and said, look, I'd actually like to write about this school, but also my own transition. And so thankfully they were open-minded and allowed me to do that.
Well, that's really good they did, because obviously it was a fairly major part of that time over there.
Yes, absolutely. I mean, the two stories can seem very disparate, but actually, I guess because it's a real thing, you know, that they are sort of intertwined in the book, I guess.
Yeah, for sure. But before that big journey, you were working as a broadcaster at Classic ABC, and you say the job of a radio presenter is to be calm and kind and entertaining.
Yeah, make all the things that you are. There you go.
Well, you know, I try, but on the inside, of course, sometimes, like you said in your book, you're colonized by depression. Can you tell me about how do you deal with that, especially when you're talking on air and trying to battle the inside demons?
Yeah, well, look, I guess that's the thing that I tried for many months to deal with it. And I have to say, working in the classical music field, it was actually a really good place to be in many ways because, you know, I was listening to this incredibly beautiful music all the time. But then actually the music programmer retired, the guy who I was working with, this wonderful bloke called Ivan Lloyd. And I got a new music programmer and, you know, no disrespect to him, but his choices weren't quite like Ivan's, and so the music changed. And so the music had kind of kept me going for a long time, but then the music changed and it just didn't really suit what I needed, I guess.
Yeah.
And so my mood just really slipped over the last few months that I was working. And look, in the end, I had to quit. You know, I had to take time off and was taken off air anyway, and in the end decided to leave.
I know a lot of people miss you being on air, but they can still hear you on Arts on ABC Radio National.
Yeah, thanks for doing the plug for me.
No worries.
Me doing it. That's great. Thank you for that.
No problem. But then, of course, this has culminated in writing books and this trip to Afghanistan, where this school over there, it's the Afghani I can't remember the name of it exactly. But
the Afghan National Institute of Music.
That's the one. And it was founded by a guy who nearly died in a suicide bomb.
Oh, yeah, that's right. Gosh, such a shocking story. Dr. Ahmad Samath, who is an Afghan-Australian.
Right.
And he restarted the school. His father had actually been the head of the school in the 70s. It was banned, of course, during the Taliban era. Mm. And then Dr. Samath got it going again back in 2010. And in, I think it was 2014, at the end of 2014, he was attending a performance, ironically, about suicide bombers, a play at the French Cultural Center in Kabul, in the middle of Kabul. And a suicide bomber came and blew himself up in this play. And the only reason that Dr. Samath survived was that at that moment, he was just checking that his mobile phone was switched off as the play began.
Oh, wow.
And he dropped the phone. It fell onto the floor. As he bent down to pick it up, the bomb went off. And so it went over the top of his head. So he truly owes his life to dropping his mobile phone.
And that's a lesson to everyone. Make sure your phones are turned off before you go to a play. But that is shocking. I mean, what a circumstance to be in. And from that, is that something that spurned him to create the school, or was he already doing it at that point?
No, he was already doing it at that point. But I have to say, it is something that sort of ironically, in a way, spurred me to go, because I knew that for the last year or so, they had been looking for a cello teacher.
Right.
And at this point, I'd stopped working at the ABC, and I heard this shocking news from Kabul, and I thought, oh, well, there's no way anybody's going to go now to teach the cello in Kabul, and I knew there were some great cellists there. Mm. And so I just thought, well, I guess I'll apply. I guess I'll be the one to do it. So I went, I actually moved to Kabul just a few months after that.
And you get to teach some children and orphans and a whole variety of children. I mean, it must have been a great experience to see their faces every day. How excited were they to sort of discover music, maybe for the first time?
Yes, incredibly excited. One of the most beautiful events I've ever witnessed was the first day of term, so just after the Iranian New Year, which is 21st of March, and all the kids were back at school, and we had this day that was kind of like the sorting hat of Harry Potter. And so all the first years, actually they choose their instrument in the second year, so the second years at school, they all sat in this room together, about 50 kids, and one by one they stood up and in English said their name and which instrument they wanted to play.
Oh.
And it was, you know, it was something that I had to work very hard to hold back my tears on that day.
Amazing. What was the most popular instrument, do you remember?
Oh, that's a good question. I think it was probably the Afghan traditional sort of official instrument of Afghanistan, which is the rhubarb, which is an ancestor of our lute and ultimately, I suppose, our guitar.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Now, you grew up in a very conservative household. I read that your parents met at the Young Conservatives in Kent in the 50s.
They did. Don't hold it against
them. Well, and I won't, because, I mean, obviously, it would have been a very tough thing to bring up with them, the subject of you transitioning. And you do to just talk about some of the struggles that you've had with that. How did you feel? What was it like when you finally
ultimately,
did it?
I mean, initially, I did think that once I realized that I was transgender, which was, you know, quite some time ago now, back in the early 2000s, actually even in 2000. Anyway, at that time, I was identifying as lesbian, and I realized that I was transgender. And my first thought, I have to say, was, what's my mum going to say? And for a whole bunch of other reasons as well, I didn't do anything about it for 15 years. But eventually, when mum did know that I was transgender, she had the most beautiful reaction to it, and she burst into tears and she said, oh, you must have been in pain for so long. Why didn't you say something before? Mm. And, you know, how extraordinary to have that reaction from your parents. And I just can only wish that that's the reaction that everybody can have from their parents, because I know that many people never tell their parents.
Yeah.
And if they do, their parents have a bad reaction. And it just leads to this terrible suicide rate that we have in the transgender community.
And it would have been an interesting place to be when you're going through this period of opening up and transitioning, and your mind was, you know, just set. And then you're in Afghanistan, which is very much, well, I have read that you said it's quite liberal as well as conservative, but in a lot of people's minds, it's quite a strict conservative sort of place. Was there a real juxtaposition there between the way you felt and what you saw every day?
Yes, absolutely. I mean, the thing about Australia is that you can be androgynous and sort of walk the middle line of gender, I think, relatively easily. You know, you don't have to look particularly feminine or indeed particularly masculine. You know, a man can walk down the street wearing a skirt and people might look at him a little bit, but they wouldn't kill him.
No.
But in Afghanistan, women have to wear a hijab and men would wear trousers and, you know, look male. And in some societies, some communities, in fact, even have to grow a beard. Yeah. And so when I first moved to, or when I lived in Afghanistan, because I was still female-bodied then, I was stuck very, very much on the female side.
Mm.
And it just made it so clear to me that this was the wrong side of gender for me.
And
so it helped.
Yeah.
It was incredibly hard.
Yeah.
but also it just made everything so clear.
Yeah, it's really interesting. Well, fantastic book. Congratulations on it. And excitingly, you're going to be talking about the book in a whole bunch of sessions at the Sydney Writers' Festival.
Yes, that's right. Yeah, I'm really looking forward to coming down to Sydney and doing that.
Yeah, there's three sessions. There's 30th of April in Katoomba at the Carrington Hotel. There's also another chat at Ashfield on the 3rd of May and also the 4th of May at Carriage Works in Everleigh. Three sessions that people can get along to. Jump onto swf.org.au to find those tickets. But fantastic. Looking forward to seeing you when you come down to Sydney.
Great. Mick, thank you so much for having me on your show.
Very welcome and thank you very much.
Okay, bye-bye.
Bye. That was Eddie Ayres right there, talking about the book Danger Music, which he will be taking on the road with the Sydney Writers' Festival. Yes, it all kicks off at the end of this month, and 2SER are very proud to be partnering with the Writers' Festival again this year.